having me. I'm really excited to be here. I got to come and attend Kindred last year when Libby got to speak, and I just love to be anywhere around her, and then did get the opportunity to get to just talk to Christina, and I'm really excited to be back. So, thank you. I also need to note that in the bio that she read, I don't live in Falls Church. We live in Arlington, and I'm just realizing that's the bio on our private practices webpage, so I should probably change that. So that's,
maybe you don't want people to know where you live.
Maybe I don't, exactly. That is true. Like she said, I was an elementary school counselor in Richmond, Virginia, and in Prince William County for about 5.5, 6 years, and then switched into private practice. And have been working for two different private practices, one in Manassas, and then switched over in June to Grace Nova Counseling, which is right in Tyson's. Today we get to talk about teenagers, and I am really excited about this because teens are near and dear to my heart. One, my husband works with them very closely, but two, this is a hot take. I think that they are some of the most fascinating, special people to be around. And I cannot imagine being a teenager right now and just what the world is offering them. And so today, my background, my expertise is really working with kids and teens. I got to tell Christina in our table earlier, I work with a wide spectrum. It's about 60% would be teens and kids, and then 40% adults. But I was actually talking to my counselor this week, and he was asking me about my job, and I just said, I think my sweet spot is teens. And a teenager can be anywhere between the ages of 13 and 19. And so we are going to begin with a little exercise. You can do this in your head. You can do this on maybe the tablecloth. Am I allowed to say that? Or on a sheet of paper if you have it. But I think that it's a good place to start by thinking about a teen in your life. Anyone between the ages of 13 and 19, whether that is a grandchild, a neighbor down the street, a kid of your own, a friend's child, and I would ask for you to just take 30 seconds and start by writing what is one thing that you delight about in your kid, in that teen, that you know, that you have, that you experience on a daily basis. I would also offer you, there's extra credit, not really, but bonus points, if you can think about something that you delight about them because of their personality, not because of something that they are good at. So I'll give you about 30 seconds just to think about what is something that you delight about in a teenager, anyone between 13 and 19 years old, that you have in your life. All right, I will not ask you to share this, but now I would kind of offer to you, think about how hard that was for you. Was it really easy to come up with something that you delight about? Was it a little bit like challenging to say, oh, I can list the 7 things that they're really good at, but it takes me a second for a personality trait. And I start that way because most sessions that I start with a teenager, I ask the kid to tell me a little bit about them, and then I turn to the parent, their guardian, someone who knows them within the room as well, and I say, can you tell me about them? And it is eye-opening to sit there and hear them kind of hesitate or stumble. It's eye-opening to hear how fast they can tell me and rattle off these things. And I think that oftentimes, in reality, and if we're all really honest, it's very easy in the life that we live to just rush through. And we oftentimes don't stop to think about, oh, what delights me about them and who they are. And that's what we really get to talk about today is these teens. We're going to get to talk about the why, the who, and the what. And so to start with the why, I think that it's important just in my line of work, we talk a lot about the brain. There's a lot of professional developments regarding the brain. And I think that it's important as parents, as people who are around teens, as you are walking through the grocery store and you hear comments, as you are driving to your house and you see these teenagers in the middle of the street and you're just curious to know, I'm not really sure where and what they're thinking. The teen brain is not fully developed, and actually a lot of research has shown that brains are not fully developed until the age of 25, and actually data is even pushing that back to 27, 28. And so I say that because it's actually really important. Maybe it's really simple information for you to know, but it gives you a lot of insight, perhaps empathy, and even more so compassion, to know that whoever is in front of you, that teenager anywhere from 13 to 19, and your young kids, their rational part of their brain is not yet developed. And in the teenage years, what's so interesting is it is expanding at a really fast rate. So they are beginning to think through things. They're trying to wrestle with the rational and irrational thought process. They're trying to be deep thinkers. And at the same time, they want nothing but independence. I think I was telling someone at my table that there's this book. I don't know if I recommend it. But the title of it is really, it's Get Out of My Life, But First Will You Take Cheryl and I to the Mall? And that is teenagers to a T, the push and the pull. There's so much tension going on in their brain. And I teach oftentimes in parent classes or even the teenagers who sit in my office with me, hey, you just feel so misunderstood by yourself. And a lot of that is because you're trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense. And so I teach them this thing. It is not taught by me, but it is developed in research. It's called flipping the lid. If you may, you might have heard of it. If our hand is the brain, it oftentimes just makes sense to teenagers to know that your fingers are part of the rational brain thinking pattern. It's the prefrontal cortex. It's right at the front of your brain. If you were to take the skin off your forehead, there it is. That is the last part of the brain to be fully developed. And if you remember, I told you that happens between ages 25 and 28. A lot of times for males, it happens even later. And so that prefrontal cortex is all about the rational. How do I think through things? How do I take this situation? And then, like, can I solve a problem or can I deep think about this without letting my emotions take control? And underneath that is the amygdala. And that is where all of the big feelings are. Oftentimes, people will say, I feel like my teenager, sometimes younger kids, just have feelings. It's a lot of feelings in the house. There's no thought behind any of those feelings. And that is really true, and it feels like that oftentimes. And so what I tell teenagers and parents is that what happens when a teen feels so misunderstood, when a teen is trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense to them, their front brain, that lid, flips. And it lets those emotions, I mean, I literally do this in my office, it lets those emotions just go wild. It is really hard to feel the connection between your prefrontal cortex and your amygdala, and so it's really difficult for them to come back to control their emotions again. And their emotions become truth. And they're trying to make sense of this all. And I tell you this, it's not just you. It's not just the neighbor down the street who think this. I was actually reading this book the other night, and it talks about the decades from ages 10 to 20, perhaps longer, is a time of explosive brain development. In short, the areas of the brain responsible for logical and strategic responses are under construction, while the emotional centers of the brain are active and seemingly unrestrained. It's familiar to parents who routinely witness their teen children reacting with emotional outbursts and responses that seem irrational or illogical. While this biological process of brain development is not within the control of the teen, It does make living with a teen, especially one with intense emotions, feel extremely difficult to their parents. I say that not to offer justification, but to say you are not alone. And it is really the development of the brain that their lids flip. So then we go into kind of the who, and when we know the information about the brain, what do we do? The who is you, the who is the adults, the people who have these fully developed parts of their brain, how do we step into their lives? What does it look like to show up to the, for them? I think it's safe to say, but I will let you be kind of the determining factor of this. I think it's safe to say that oftentimes parents and adults in teenagers' lives show up to fix, solve, protect, guard, give wisdom, or offer advice. That oftentimes a teenager can storm into a place, into their house after school, and it's, ugh, mom, just listen to this. And it's oftentimes, well, did you try this? Why did you not talk to this teacher? Well, have you done this? Or let me call them and figure it out for you. And oftentimes a teenager shows up in that emotional state just wanting to be understood and heard. And so oftentimes I tell people it's not so much about speaking to a teenager, but it's just being with them and the power of your presence. The reality is that kids and teens, our children, our grandchildren, maybe the neighbors in the street, the kids in the grocery store, or when you're sitting at a restaurant tonight, are living in a different world. It's very different than the world that we lived in when you were a teen. It's really different, and I often tell parents this sitting in my office together. They might say, well, I have this 22-year-old, and I have this 14-year-old, and I, like, didn't parent too long ago a 14-year-old. It is completely different, and it is changing every day. The society that they're living in, the pressure that they're living in, and also this need to know who they are, what they think, what they like, what they know. They have to understand themselves first and foremost, and it feels like utter chaos because of that brain is just in that emotional state. The main goal of teens is really searching to be understood while not fully understanding themselves. When I sit in my office with teens, the same narrative comes up over and over and over again. I just want to be listened and heard. And not so much that they're like being able to say these words to me, but as I repeat back what they're saying, and at least being able to say, like, I hear you. You watch kind of them like relax. It's not so much because they need me to come in and fix for them. It's not because they need me to solve the things going on. It's just the simple fact that they need a space that they can show up to be heard, to be seen, to be known, to be loved. I also say this with a caveat. You do not always have to agree or side with the things that your child or teenager is saying. From very young kids, the youngest that I work with is 3, up until teenagers and college age students, some of the most powerful words that you can ever say to a kid are, I believe you. So as they are experiencing that flip of the brain and the emotions, that is what is real to them inside. It feels like chaos. And so when we try and enter into and we solve and we fix and we think about, oh, let me give wisdom or advice, or I remember when I was your age, or when your brother was 14, this is what we did and how we parented them. In reality, I just offer to you how powerful it could be as your kid comes in from school, or that teenager kicks a ball into your car, or whatever it may be, and they come in this fury of emotions. The who, your job is to regulate for them, to bring their brain back down so that they're at a controlled state. And sometimes that just looks like saying, I believe you. I don't have to agree with what you're thinking or what you did. I don't have to side with you, but I believe that what is going on for you inside you is real. There is a great thing, and I love the scripture that you guys are going through, just my grace is sufficient for you, because I say the who, that's you. Your job in a teenager's life is really to regulate for them, to bring that brain back down, to take note of what you think and what you feel, and then to help them get back down to that kind of regulated state. A lot of times that looks like whatever you might need to do to cope and enter into a situation with them, whether that's take a deep breath, whether that is like leave the room and come back. And a lot of times we are not regulated ourselves, and so we react out of our stories, and we also react out of like how dare, like, wait a second. Like, if you actually thought about this for a moment, you wouldn't have made that choice. Like, I don't understand. There's a beautiful just phrasing that we use in our profession called rupture and repair. And if you think about every time that you interact, it can be with a teenager, it can be with a small child, and you have this moment where all of a sudden you feel yourself becoming dysregulated as well, you are much more likely to get that brain back down to a regulated state faster. You're able to think through that. You're able to kind of manage your emotions and your behaviors out of it. If and when you rupture that relationship, all of a sudden your teen comes to you and you express something which only escalates you, which escalates them, that's their job. Their job is to get you escalated more and to forget about why we even started this in the first place. That's their whole tension is, hey, I need you, I want you, please help me. And at the same time, I want to be independent. I'm trying to figure out the world. I'm trying to understand things. I'm trying to understand myself. And it feels like the person who is the safest doesn't understand me. And if you don't understand me, how am I supposed to understand myself? And so I say rupture and repair, because some of the best work that parents, that grandparents, that guardians can do is to enter back in to repair the relationship. A lot of times you might have experience with a teenager coming in and kind of saying like, I hate you. You are the worst mom, I think this table said. Like, I wish I had a different mom. I never want to see you again. And then they leave, they slam their door, they go into their room, and about 2 minutes later they come back out and they're like, Mom, what are we having for dinner? And everything, I have experienced this, and everything in me, I should speak from experience, is like, how dare you like come back out here and think that everything's okay? And like inside of me, I am boiling still. We need to talk about how disrespectful you were. We need to talk about how that won't happen again. We are going to wait for so-and-so to get home. Like, you better, you just wait. And so in that moment, I offer you the thought of just rupture and repair. Your brain is fully developed, and so it is okay to say, hey, I'm not ready to have a conversation. What are your coping tools that bring your brain back down so that you're not speaking out of that emotional place? And if you do, how willingly, how quickly are you able to go and say, I'm sorry? How many people around teenagers these days are not going back to repair a rupture, and they just leave it? And how devastating, how unsafe that feels for teens. That as their brain is kind of left in this state, they went into their room for 2 minutes, they got their brain down, they're not thinking about it anymore. But the importance of that repairing relationship, the ability for someone who does feel safe to go back in and say, hey, I'm sorry. I did explode, and I am feeling lots of things. I should have taken a break. you're able to teach them a coping tool. You're able to teach them some way for them to kind of bring their brain back down without going and slamming their door and going into their room, if that makes sense. And then the last thing going along those lines that I would offer you is the what. I am a type A personality. I love a to-do list. I love a checklist. I love to have pieces of paper and to tangible things that I can take away and say like, okay, I'm in. Like, I'm ready to do this, but now what? What do I do? What do I say? And I've given you a few of those, but just very tangibly on here, in a pretty blunt way, I would just offer you, your story is not your child's. It is separate. And in that, there is so much. You guys started today by talking about that his grace is sufficient. It's not only sufficient for you, but it's also sufficient for your teenager. And the reality is that we are each bringing in to each of, we are bringing in to each moment that we experience with our teenager or with our kids, our own stories, triggers, things that were said or done or behaviors from whether it's our childhood or our relationships or our past or even our present. You're coming in, you're carrying 12 bags of groceries, your teenager is on their phone, totally like bypasses you, and then gets mad at you because the groceries aren't unloaded fast enough because they're hungry. And I offer to you the simple fact of your story is separate from your child's, because a lot of times when their brains flip, it triggers us, and there is some sort of foundation behind that trigger. And so that is only really work, one, that the Lord can do, and two, that we can enter into and say like, wait a second, they're not telling me like that I'm the worst mom in the world. It's not because of my parenting. It's not because like I've done something wrong or like I'm a total failure, which is oftentimes what parents feel like. I'll never get this right. Why even try? Like, here we go again. And so some of the work starts with ourselves to say like, how do I cope? How do I manage so that I'm not showing up and trying to fix or change things about my story for my child? The next thing, it's simple, but it's powerful wisdom, hopefully, that maybe you can take, that I tell every parent every time I meet with them: talk less, listen more. Because we often try and go into conversations and we try and fix and solve and protect them from the world around them. We try and change things. We try and email that teacher to get that grade fixed, or we try and solve that friendship for them. We are very quick to, they tell us something's going on, and then all of a sudden we're ready to go. And what would it be like for you to just say, can you help me understand? You might feel like you already know it, but how valuable it is for teenagers to be able to have a voice rather than just be told or talked to again. It is okay, and I tell parents this a lot, when kids are just so emotionally dysregulated that their lid is flipped and their emotions are just kind of going. A lot of times they don't know what's going on, and so it feels like utter chaos. And how important it is for just the simple statement of, you can name the emotion, you can believe the emotion, you don't have to believe what happened, you don't have to believe them, you don't have to agree with it, and then ask, help me understand. That's a great three-part sentence. Kid comes in, throws down the backpack, I can see you're really frustrated. I believe you. Can you help me understand? And maybe it's right before that, you have to take a deep breath yourself. You have to like do something. Okay, I gotta like wash my hands to feel some sort of sense. Or maybe you're not ready to enter into that yet and you know yourself best. Maybe it is a kid begins to cry or a teenager begins to cry and I can see that something's really making you upset. I believe you. Can you help me understand? And then just let it sit. That is the hardest part a lot of times, especially for teenagers. Sometimes they're going to say, no, I'm not talking to you. No, you can't do anything about it. No, I can't help you understand. I don't even know what's going on. And they're so dysregulated, their emotions are the things that are speaking. And so if you let it just linger and you say, help me understand, you've already believed them, you've validated their feeling. Now you want to know more. You're creating space for them to share their perspective. It's really difficult. I would just let it kind of sit there and simmer. They may not be ready to talk to you yet, but a lot of times I get to experience that a team comes back and they will be able to then bring their brain down and make sense of what was not understood before. The third thing would be, are you asking the hard questions? A lot of times teenagers are dealing with, there was just a study that came out this past Monday, and I don't know if it would even be helpful to give you specific facts and data, but the suicide rate for teenage girls is only increasing. And I get to see it every day with teens and just walking through things with them. And it's not to make us feel scared or sad, but it's really to say, a lot of these things, because they're scary and sad, we are trying to protect them from it. And so are you asking the hard questions? Are you willing to enter into the spaces? Because when teens come and sit in front of me, what most of them say is, oh, I've just wanted counseling for so long. And they need a space that they can feel heard, that they can be understood and believed. And so some of those questions can look like, hey, I notice that this has been a really challenging year for you. Have you thought about counseling? Do you want therapy? Hey, is there anything on your mind that you want me to know about? Hey, I know that it doesn't always feel safe, like our relationship might not always feel safe. But I need you to know that I'm always here to listen if there's anything you want me to share. And then be silent. Go back to number two, talk less and listen more. You are planting those seeds just to let them know that you are there, that you see them, that you believe what's going on for them, and that they can come to you. A lot of times they might say like, no, I'm fine. Stop asking me that. And your response can be, okay, I'm just going to let you know. I'm here if you need me. In this book that I referenced earlier, it is really after those teenage years that all of a sudden your teenager, it feels like, comes out of the room and all of a sudden they start saying, I love you. Thanks for dinner. And you're like, who are you and what have you done with my child? And that really is, the brain is growing and rapidly changing and expanding. And so you're getting to see that. We don't understand and don't get to see the growing development of the brain firsthand. We're just watching it in this human that's before us, and that's really difficult. And so my last thing, kind of where we started today, was the fact that kids and teenagers can feel and sense when you do not like them, and when you don't like to be around them, or you disagree with them. And that's hard to hear, but it's pretty true. Just to know, kids cannot, you don't have to say very much for them to know that something that they have done upsets you. Shame is the first feeling that a kid experiences from a very young age. And a lot of times that tension with teenagers is to avoid feeling shame. And so they come in and it's, how could you do that? Were you not thinking about that? Why did you go? And like, I was going to say egg a house. I don't know if people do that anymore. But okay, it's too expensive. That is true. It's too expensive. But like, they have a multitude of other things that they do that you're like, were you, I mean, we work with teenagers every day, and I will tell you this story that I got up one morning and I walked outside, and we do have a Rhodesian Ridgeback, a rather large dog, and his poop was all over our sidewalk. And we had had some, this was back when we lived in Fairfax, and we had had some high school boys over the night before, and they thought it was a really smart idea to take his poop bag and then ride over it with a skateboard. And I walk out, and I'm like, help me understand this. And they did come back and like they cleaned it up and washed it off. But it's one of those things where it's like, this doesn't make any sense. There is nothing about that. But then to get to enter into that and say like, yeah, that probably wasn't your smartest choice that you've ever made. And I still love this, this, and this about you. How important the word and is rather than but. Hey, that was a really bad choice. And I know that you are a really good kid. Hey, terrible decision by running over that with skateboard. Hey, not great way to respect your teachers at school. Rather than, so we're going to do, there's going to be this consequence and this consequence and this consequence. And I know that you can make better choices. Speaking truth into them for them because they don't have that truth for themselves. There is a great scripture that is in Psalm 18:19 that just says that he brought me out into a broad place. He rescued me because he delighted in me. And how appropriate this ties, I think, to parenting, really, to say he brought me into a broad place, into a place of safety, into a place of just being able to look around and say, oh, it's so expanse. The expanse is great. And then to say, you rescued me. To be able to say, like, you showed up. You cared enough to come back to repair a rupture time and time and time again because you can. They don't feel like they are capable because you delighted in me. There is a couple of sheets on each table. Drexel University put out this great study and then created, it's a thing of three of them. I might have some extras. I was going to say, I told Christina, I don't know if I printed enough, but I can email it out. It's an emotional coaching sheet that I often use with parents for teenagers. It can be used for young kids as well, and it's really just giving more practicals. A lot of the things that we talked about today, but it goes into more of, hey, what is it like to talk less, listen more? What phrases can I say? What things can I do? How do I show up after my kid has just pushed my buttons? What does my teenager need? How do I ask the hard questions? Because those feel really uncomfortable for me. And again, how do I separate my own story from my child's? I think that, I hope that was under 30 minutes. Okay. I will stick around. I was given kind of the task to maybe ask two discussion questions. You can talk about whatever you would like. But I think that it is important a lot of times for us as we work with teens or we work with kids, grandkids, neighborhood kids, kids at a restaurant, to just say what parts of my own story make it difficult to parent. Does anything come up that are specific triggers? And what do I need to do, knowing myself best? What is it like to take a deep breath, to grab a glass of water, to go for a walk, to take a break, be able to say, I'm not able to engage in this right now. And then the second thing is, what things or ways can you practically think of to delight in your teen, the teens that you know, the kids that you have? Find joy in the things that they do, lean into the spaces that they are already in with them. So there you are. Thank you. Bring it on.
I absolutely love everything you said. Totally agree. My question is, when my teen comes in and there's all of this drama and emotion, and I initially try to do the things that you have said and validate her, in this room, all of us being parents and all wanting to be good, responsible parents, it's hard to know. It's our job to do this teaching, to tell them then the wisdom that you may have, or the truth that you know from Scripture that's applicable, or even the route that they might take.
Sure.
And other adults in their life have a different role, but ours specifically is to coach and disciple and train and discipline them. So it's very hard to stop yourself in those moments that feel very teachable, to help them contextualize what just happened and guide them into correct thinking. But that doesn't seem to go over very well. But that's my job.
Must just be you.
I feel very, very strongly that that's my job. I don't want them to be necessarily seeking it from other people. This is why I'm in the room. This is what I was created for in this moment. So I want to hold your hand in this and show you and help you, and yet you don't want it. But when can I do my job?
That's a great question. Maybe, I don't know. I told Christina at the beginning, I was like, I don't know if I'll have answers. I know people who know the answers. And I actually did go around to some of the other coworkers in my office and just said, like, quick, you have to tell parents one thing about teenagers, what would it be? And like got their wisdom, which is a lot of where this came up from. They are not able to hear, listen, or respond when they are in this emotional state. And so practically I hear that and I wonder, and I'm just curious to know, what would it be like in that moment for them to be so, come in, you need to input wisdom, provide some sort of direction. And in reality, what would it be like for them to come in for you to, hey, it seems like you're really upset about this, or it seems like this really caused you like to feel a lot of things. You might not even name the emotion. You might just say, you're feeling a lot of things and I believe you. Can you help me understand? They're not going to be able to hear any input, wisdom, advice until their brain is back down into a regulated state. Sometimes that takes hours.
Years.
And so I offer to you the idea of saying, okay, can you even just practice rupture and repair? Practice showing up for them, saying those three things in the moment, and what would it look like later that night at bedtime, going in and saying like, hey, can we circle back to this? Like, just because a couple of things stood out to me. It is important to know that I like to say that teens can only, what they hear in that emotional state is a drop of your fire hose. And so they're not able to take any.
I mean, I have so much to give.
I know. And I am willing to show up and listen to you because I feel like I would have a lot to learn. But in that moment, what can you do? And it also could benefit yourself. Hey, I have so much to give and it's all good, but is it my story? Is it what they need to hear? And so showing back up later is a total way to show them, hey, I'm still thinking about this and I still see you. And also I am your parent. Like, I'm not just this role of saying like, I agree with you. You do whatever you want. You do you. Like, good luck tomorrow. But you do want to provide them insight. And so it could look like and maybe that's just time and space for yourself as well to say, okay, what really do I want to share with them? And spending time with the Lord in that too, of like, okay, and maybe you go back in later that night or next day at breakfast. Hey, can we circle back to this before you walk out the door today?
Maybe I can help as well. If I can chime in very quickly over there. Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Svetlana. I'm new here, but I have two daughters, one of them being a teenager in, let's say, 10 years ago. The other one is a teenager right now. I have more than 20 years experience working with children through the arts and teenagers as well. And the way I could help you with this dynamics, to me, it's like, imagine the Trojan War. You have the Trojans who are super advanced